And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started.
So, you know, just to review just a teeny bit, that band, when I entered LA, this is what had happened, okay? That band was Wild Honey, and they were signed to Reprise. Addie Lee owned the band, okay? June and Gene asked to join it, and Nikki wasn't in yet. Alice was in it, and they got their deal. You know, Reprise was interested, and they came down, and there were negotiations and all that stuff, and Addie left over some shady royalty thing. She had a lot of integrity, and she did, I'm not doing this. So she took her name and, you know, don't let the door hit you as you walk out. You know, the other girls wanted to do the deal no matter what it entailed. So they did their deal. They had Reprise supporting them for albums, okay? Money, support, your dad fully in. Everything was on the up and up. And then the infighting happened with Nikki and June. And they were young. They were hungry. Like you talk about the malice, there was so much internal fighting that got in the way. A lot of conflict in the pot. And then the breakup, okay? In their own oral histories and written histories, you can read it anywhere online because, you know, before I came out, of course, I read whatever I could to find out about him and stuff. And I knew about him from playing the gig with him. But it was new to me, that band, you know, pretty new as I'm dropped into it. And June leaves because of her own reasons. She had a reason. Alice was given an ultimatum by her girlfriend. You know, it's me or the band. And she leaves, and shortly after that, she did quit playing. She just gave it all up. And they called me, Gene and Roy, and they had, they wanted me to come out. I don't remember any kind of an audition. I never really knew Alice at all or June. I didn't know them. They're strangers to me. And so apparently, Gene and Nikki wanted to continue, period. End of story. They did not want to quit. The other two quit. That's what I was dropped into.
Well, and hold that thought because I want to keep going with that. But I want to pick up on something you said about Addie Lee owning the name Wild Honey. And that's how they were initially and originally signed.
Yes.
Richard Perry. You use the word integrity. I use the word integrity with Addie Lee because this to me is there, as you said, here's the difference between those who are hungry and those who are doing it for the love of music. Yes. So Addie Lee, when they're getting signed, was something like 17 years old. I mean, she's a puppy. But with that said, she is not green and she's not naive because her parents were in the music biz. She grew up, they were jazz musicians.
Same as me, yep.
So, there you go, same as me. So we have this understanding, but I will say, What would not necessarily be me, I have to be honest, I probably would have signed the deal and given all of my royalties away because I was that hungry person. Whereas Addie Lee said, I'm out. I didn't work this hard and I don't love music this much to hand it all over to someone else who didn't create this music. And she walked away. That's just to me phenomenal. And I don't know many people in LA that would have walked away from it.
Nope. There, you know what? I'll say one point about Addie because I worked with her. You don't know this, but we had collaborations after Fanny that we thoroughly, she is such a guitar talent. Her voice was the strongest one in Fanny, and they lost that when she left and her lead guitar. June had to pick it up. And Richard was calling her to play on his sessions. I mean, the woman had so much integrity and she never completely went mainstream. She had a wonderful career, you know, bluesy guitarist and all that. And I loved working with her. And did you know that she played in my brother's band?
No.
I swear to God, after I was in Fanny and later and all that, she played in Mickey's band. We laughed. about it now. I mean, we grew up in the same kind of family. Her mother was a great singer. Addie had a great voice. And the girl was loaded with integrity. I have all the respect in the world for her walking away with her integrity. But that's how it came down, you know? It was unbelievable. So this is what I was dropped into.
Well, it dropped into, and you also really made another great point. All of your points are great, which is Jean Millington and Nikki Barclay, with the absence of June 1st and then subsequently Alice leaving, they were gung-ho in wanting to continue the band. And it's worth reiterating that this is without a record deal now. So they wanted to continue the band Fanny, and Reprise had just let them go because they weren't bringing in the money. So that tells you how driven they were to continue and then to bring you in. And then after that, Bree was brought in. So please keep going.
Absolutely. Well, Bree and I were pretty excited to join. You know, we all started rehearsing and all that, as we talked about at length in the earlier episodes. But then I started becoming aware of this new element in LA that shocked me, hurt me, embarrassed me, and I had to just deal with it, you know, because we were in the midst of doing this new band. And I had already bonded, which I'll talk about later, but Nikki and I had a quick bonding over the music. You know, I had been used to writing with Meat on the Bone from the Quattro bands in Detroit Magic. And we always, social issues, et cetera, et cetera. Nikki was the same. She was a deep thinker. So it was real important for her to get out, you know, lyrics that meant something, and just, we bonded. That's all I can say, you know, from the beginning in our writing, that was important. So I came aware of this microphone that Alice was using, and it was very sad for me to have that happen in my life. I'd never experienced that in Detroit.
I need to interrupt because I want to clarify for anybody out there. So okay. Alice DeBuer, June Millington leaves the band Fanny. Soon thereafter, Alice DeBuer leaves the band Fanny. She quits the band Fanny.
Right.
Are you saying that this microphone that Alice was using happened at that moment that she left? Was it years later? What is the timing of, as you and I have referred to this as shade throwing, when did this shade throwing actually begin for you?
Went through decades, if I can be blunt, through decades. And I will explain, because it bears shining light on. This is the part of showbiz that did not impress me in any way to do this to other female musicians. Don't we have a hard enough time making it in the men's club? But it became aware to me that there was some press out or interviews she was doing. I mean, not the day that I joined, but, you know, as we were working and getting the band ready, all of a sudden it came to light that she was demeaning my talent, saying I couldn't tune my guitar, or, you know, that she, all these things that I had not been aware of, because I thought she left because her girlfriend gave her an ultimatum and all that. And I didn't find out till way later what the real reasoning was. And it threw me. I just kept going. You know, I had never even played with her. She was a drummer, not a guitarist.
I was just going to ask that. That doesn't even make sense to me, because you're a guitar player and she was a drummer.
Yeah. Yeah. But she saw her band breaking up, and this is what she wanted to put out there in the public sphere. And it was very, very disheartening to me.
Well, and I want you to talk more than disheartening. I mean, I don't mean to bring up a painful experience for you, but that must have been just, you're a human. How was that not heartbreaking for you?
It was horrible, especially since I knew, I don't live in the ego world, okay? I just don't. And I knew my creds. I knew that I was a worthy replacement, you know, with my name and what I'd already done 5 years ago with other bands, blah, 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 blah. You know, I brought something to the table. Nikki knew it. Jean knew it. They said it more than once. I mean, they were so excited to have this raw Detroit edge coming in. maybe, you know, propel them into a new feel and all that. The label was excited. I mean, I had all the support in the world as far as the veneer of magic, okay? I had that from Neil, from Roy, from Nikki and Jean both. And they just, let's do it. Let's go. New stage presentation, new costuming. Let's get after it. Write some new music. It was an exciting time. And then this happened. And it's like, what? You know, where did this come from? And I will say, even the fans got involved. You know how the biz can be. You know, you had your loyalists. There was a platform at that time that was, you know, all about Fanny Girls, and it broke up. So, you know, the loyalists were like, oh my God, crying in their beer and all that. And then other fans were more open-minded, as this happens in the world of music. And they wanted to, oh, put the pictures up, let's see them, and da-da-da. And some people knew who I was, and there was an excitement. The girl that ran it had to end up opening up the platform and adding our pictures and talking about it and including us. So that happened. But there was just the vision. Yes.
Just to clarify, we did speak a lot about this in season one. And big fan, Cherry Simpson, had a lot to say about this on that episode. You can go look that up. But the platform that you're referring to is called Seven Roads, I believe. Yes. And that's a Fanny song from the older incarnation. And yes, there were loyalists who only wanted to be in the first Fanny camp. That's, you know, and but it became rabid. It became to the point where it got nasty and it got ugly. And so you're talking about Margaret, who ran it, who then finally opened it up to let in people saying, what about the fifth Fanny album? What about
It came pretty quick. I mean, I'm telling you, it didn't take too long because there was so much excitement going on about the new lineup. And she opened it up. She had me write this, I don't know, 7-page letter of what I thought about it and where I came from and, you know, just fill it all in a bio. And Cherry wrote a thing and he was like, oh, geez, the fourth album, you could see the seeds of discontent. And, you know, he had his say so and he went to the moon and Bree and Patty are great. And I mean, on and on. He supported all of it. He hated that there was division. Absolutely hated it. I just carried on. I didn't give it air. I had no time to give it air. I wasn't going to wallow in it because I'm not like that. And so I didn't fuel it, but it was out there and hurtful.
Well, it's interesting, if I may make a comparison with this Margaret person. As many know, but as you know, Patty, the former podcast that I did, which was called Get Behind Fanny, which was about the first four Fanny albums, and Alice DeBure joined me on that along with Byron Wilkins. And this was not from the fans. This was from the top. I could not write any episodes that included the fifth Fanny album. I could only focus on the first four. It was as if the fifth Fanny album never existed, as if Casablanca never happened, as if your two charted singles never happened. And it was very limiting for me. But it was also, more importantly, very limiting for your fans. And I got a lot of private dissing that I did not include your album. And I had to keep my mouth shut because I didn't want to say anything. But I'm tired of keeping my mouth shut because you can't have the band Fanny and isolate it. It's a larger history. It's a larger story. And it's far more interesting by including you and Bree in the arc of Fanny. There were six of you and Cam Davis for that matter. I'm so glad Cam Davis is getting her props. So anyway, I just wanted to interject that.
You know, I'll interject something further about that, you know, to try to keep to the theme of our, you know, magic and malice. I mean, fans are an odd thing. You know, I mean, I understand the psychology of what they go through. I mean, I've seen, you know, there's a few male bands that a singer changes and they, oh, I don't like, you know, like Journey went through that when they replaced the singer and stuff. It happens. But this was beyond the pale. It was so divisive. And they were like, ah, maybe because it was girls and there weren't a lot of girl bands around. I mean, the tent was huge, But they weren't in the public eye yet. Fanny was in the public eye. My quattro bands had been in the public eye, but this was different. I don't know, Caddy, you know, the woman thing. I don't know what it was. I understand fans being, you know, rabid about one incarnation, but it just went beyond the pale and it was so stupid. I mean, you should just enjoy the music. You know, I felt that, the difference between Detroit and LA and what happened there with the new lineup. It wasn't cool.
Well, I want to continue this conversation because it wasn't just Alice who threw shade at you over the decades. There was a twist from some of the other members as well. I mean, you talked about in the beginning, and I confirmed this again with your PR guy, Gary Stromberg, Nikki Barkley and Gene Millington pushed and wanted to go forward and thought you were fantastic and thought the addition of you made the band stronger and more and ready to go. And the press commented on this. And Gary confirmed to me that this was not just made up PR. They really felt that way, Gene and Nikki. But So continue on this throwing shade theme, because Nikki had said something, but I want to start with the other band member who publicly on an oral history, and that's Gene Millington, said something about you and about Nikki that I want to talk about. So I'll let you take over.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because there were earlier histories. We'll get to the meat of some of this. There were some earlier written histories that they all did. Nikki went pretty vitriolic on it. You know, she wrote quite a piece and probably angered a lot of fans that were loyalists, and others were open-minded, you know, and took it all in because Nikki had quite a mouth on her. You know, she was very honest. And she had said that she had never, you know, wanted to be in Fanny. I think you know some of that because of her husband. She didn't want to join a girl band. She had been with Joe Cocker, and she was quite sophisticated. I always, as I look back with wisdom, to me, Nikki elevated the band. Okay. She was such a talent, and she was a deep thinker. She wrote amazing. Her songs, when you look online through decades, hers get a lot of attention, and the covers. They did real good covers. Fanny did good covers. So those were the things you see a lot online. And they just weren't able to get that number one hit, you know, and break through in four albums, which is, as you explained, why Reprise was like, okay, we've spent enough on this endeavor, and the infighting, and June was ready to leave. So Nikki said a lot in her written history. You know, she really ripped a new butthole, as they would say, and told her real feelings about how she had felt being in the band. She did say she enjoyed playing live at times, and you know, there was that dichotomy, but her and June, they just couldn't marry up their writing differences, in my view. And Bree talked a lot about this on the minis. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a difference when you would see them live, and they didn't have this front type of singer, you know, at that time on those albums. Addie was gone. She had a very strong voice. And so it was different. And Nikki came in and did it. You know, she stayed there for 4 years and did the albums. But she sure had a lot to say.
She had a lot to say. And I one of the things that I noticed in reading that article, and also I always have to say this, I have to preface anything about Nikki. I love Nikki Barkley. I have such fond memories of her as a kid. She and I absolutely got along. It makes it very clear that she hates my father, and she gets to hate my father. There's some chronological issues in terms of her malice towards my father, in terms of stealing her magic in her solo career. But that's not really what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is the fact that, yes, Nikki threw incredibly vitriolic shade at the band. But what I find interesting is her bitterness does mainly focus on the first four.
Yes, it does completely.
She doesn't go for you or Bree, because as you've talked about, and I'd like you to talk about this again a little bit more in detail, because in Cradle, which we'll be talking about in season three, your band, this is when you started exploring writing a rock opera. And then you come to Fanny and you pitch this idea to Nikki, and Nikki just goes, so ballistic in terms of joy. And you're now making this creative endeavor together. And one of the things that Patty, you and I were talking about this privately, but when you watch Fanny on the Beat Club, it's very personal for me because my father's there. You can hear his voice. He's their manager. Alice is when she says, "Roy, that's my dad."
Yeah.
And it's odd for me to watch it. But the thing that I noticed was on the Beat Club, Nikki looks really uptight when she's starting on some of her videos, you know, trying to keep everybody, you know, let's keep the pace going. I'm paraphrasing. And you can see that she's very focused and very serious.
If that's the way to put it.
When I, in season one, I can't believe we were lucky enough to be able to show everybody your performance of Fanny on Glenn Kirshner, right? Kirshner. Glenn Kirshner is the prosecutor. I'm sorry. Kirshner. Too much politics. And what blew me away was not only you, because you're mesmerizing and incredible, but we know that, but watching Gene come forward as a front person. But my point is that Nikki, the difference on that video, Nikki comes to life. She is just bouncing and so excited to be playing rock and roll with really outrageously talented musicians. And I remember, and I said this to you when you sent me that video, and I got to watch it because I hadn't seen that since I was six or six and a half.
Oh my God.
And I remember I squealed and went, "That's the Nikki I remember. That's the
happy."
And I do think she just really came into her own with you in Fanny. But I want to say one more thing about Nikki. And it's to reaffirm what you're saying. To me, Nikki was Fanny's anchor between the first band and the second band. You would not have had Fanny without Nikki Barkley.
I agree. And what you said about, you know, how she went to town on the first one when she wrote her thing, she really had to get it out of her, you know, vent. And so did the other girls. I mean, we'll get to that. But the only thing she said about the Casablanca, just one line or two lines, she said, you know, she had felt that the producer hadn't done his job good enough, you know, to bring the songs out the best they could be. And she wasn't a fan of how he mixed it or his people mixed it. So that was her beef. That was the only thing she said about it. She didn't go to town on me and Bree. But that was it. And then so when those written and oral histories came out, quite a bit came to light that I had not known and surprised me, okay? Because there was the shade throwing and all that. And we had had two charted singles and a great last album, two successful tours, great press. No drama. It was a drama-free zone for the last lineup. And we wrote a rock opera and new songs. Nikki had written part of a rock opera already. So I brought mine. She had hers. We put it all together. So it had been a very good working thing for however long it lasted. And then I became aware of those. I had read the original histories, which were pretty amazing to me, because in those histories, the written ones, they had said there was so much blame game going on. You know, we talked about this on one of the podcasts. It's so easy. You're in this big city, LA, clawing your way up. You know, they blame the management. They blame the label. They blame the producers not producing them right. You know, everything. There was, I mean, Bree had mentioned at one point that they seemed to lack like that front person, you know. So there were different opinions of it all. And they were a good working band. You know, their four albums were nicely done, but it hadn't broken through. You know, wrong timing, the infighting, whatever it was, there was so much in the pot that it just didn't happen. And like I said, when we did the new lineup, everything went in a different direction. You know, it just completely changed. So Gene and I, let's talk about the first one that blew my mind. This happened in the oral life histories. So we're jumping quite ahead, you know, but it'll bring
just
in.
Just to clarify for people who don't know, of the life oral histories were done a couple, maybe a decade ago.
Yeah. So, late in life, though.
Later
in life. Fanny, after Fanny stopped.
Way after Fanny stopped.
Yes. After it stopped. So it brings in what happened, you know, why we broke up and all that.
Well,
so,
wait, before you get to this, because I do think it's we need to clarify something. You were on Casablanca with Fanny. You're having two charted singles. You're really starting to take off. Nick decides to leave the band. And then Gene, because of personal reasons, leaves the band. So it's another thing I want to talk about just really quickly before you get to these life oral histories, because I think it also, just shining a light on this.
Yeah.
People who look at the first four albums with Fanny, I agree with their assessment. I agree with your assessment. The timing wasn't right.
Yeah.
Because as Bree had said, they were given every opportunity possible. It's just the timing wasn't right. With Casablanca, Fanny, when you guys were there, the timing was right.
Yes.
Neil Bogart knew it. My dad, your manager, knew it. I think everybody that was around, the press knew it. The press made comments that this was your time. Robert Hilburn from the LA Times commented that this is your moment. So this is not a matter of, with Fanny on Casablanca, of, oh, bad management, or it didn't happen. No, it was about to happen. But Nikki leaves, and then Gene leaves, and then it was not going to be the band anymore. So now to pick up on decades later, you were talking about Gene Millington and her life oral history.
Yes, it's Gene and Alice did one each, and Bree did one too. They're all online. Here's my assessment with some aged wisdom, okay? This is important to put in because you always want to look at the magic, and unfortunately in LA, some of the malice. And it was an element that I had never experienced, so it was hard for me. Gene and I were real close. We lived with you and your dad. It was like a family unit. I was in the apartment. We were very close during our times in Fanny. I knew everything that was going on in her head and what was, you know, problems or whatever. And you got to realize, we were out of our comfort zone. I touched on this in the podcast. We were out of our comfort zone. I was away from my sister. She was away from her sister. We had played with our sisters for years. You know, this is something very different. And I think it did throw her a bit. I was ready for it. You know, Susie had already left for England, and I had already played with two other sisters when Susie left. Really talented gals in Cradle. And then with Mickey, and then coming out to. So I had already had some experience separating from the sister duo. Gene hadn't. This was a new thing. Okay. So there we are. And I think June was very dominant. So this was a change for Gene. Okay. And when she came in, my opinion was that it was very good to round out, and very good for her to round out. And I was on her ass a bit. I think maybe I brought some intimidation along into the mix, because I was a very strong stage presence type gal. You know, I didn't sit still on stage. I wanted to get up front, put my guitar in the air, do some guitar dueling with Gene. I pushed her pretty hard. And honestly, for me, I felt, and this isn't me bragging or anything, it was just who I was, you know, as I came into the band. But I, you know, let's get up there. Let's bring some element of stage presence. So we did. And it made her much more of a front performer. And I told her this too. You know, that doesn't come through in her diss, in her oral. She called me a great gal and adequate, but nothing like June. That was what she chose to say in her, I'm telling you, it blew my mind when she worded it that way.
Can you repeat that? Say it one more time.
She called me adequate, a great gal, but nothing like June. So, I mean, to me, that's a lot of psychology there. When she did that, she had left the band. You know, the band had broken up. She had a lot going on. She was in an affair with a married man with a child. Your family unit was breaking up. She was not knowing what was going to come next for her in her life. And then she got back with June. And so she was going to favor June. You know, to me, it's very psychologically understandable that she threw some shade at me, you know, trying to balance it, saying, oh, well, she's a great gal. But, you know, I mean, Oh, please, please,
I will
please.
say this, and my bias is openly on my sleeve when it comes to you, but I don't think the word adequate in terms of your talents is applicable on any level. Adequate is just not a word. It's no, that's I anyway, I'll let it go.
You know, let me just clarify that a bit, because I do understand the psychology of all this. Everybody can have their favorite guitarists and all that. You know, I do too. You know, I might not like another one's style and I like this one's style. I mean, but God's sakes, I had come from mentoring with Jeff Beck and Leslie West and the Homeboys, and I knew what I could bring to the table. And I'll tell you, the biggest thing that affected me, and I was inducted into a Hall of Fame in Detroit for my contributions. You know, I mean, this is stuff that matters. You know, I mean, adequate, please, you know. And then I will say one thing about this. Never, in, this is what is in my craw the most, as far as the sadness of how she chose to handle herself in that oral history, because that's not magic. That's malice, okay, when you do that. And I knew it full tilt. I would never in a million years have compared in any life history Susie to Jean. You're talking about two bass players. Susie, 55 years in the biz. She's an iconic bass player, known for her solos. You know, she's, you gotta be kidding. I would never have thought to compare her. I would never do that to Jean. And even after the band ended, I would never have done it. Jean's a good bass player. You know, no, leave it out. You know, well,
there's room for so many.
Yes.
Back to this idea of, it's one thing if she doesn't like, let's say, your style of playing. That's a very different expression than she's okay. She's adequate.
Yeah.
And she, but she's no June.
It just was so strange for me, you know, and I had pioneered two bands, the ground bands, and then come to Fanny to put my contributions, you know, leave it out. You didn't need to do that, Gene. So that was disappointing to me for how close we had been and how much I knew what she had been going through at the breakup, you know, but no, can't talk about that stuff, you know, but, you know, just throw it at Patty, you know, no. No. And one more thought. I think she felt a bit left out in the new band, like I explained. And I had bonded with Nikki heavily. I was close with Jean, but as far as musicianship, I had bonded with Nikki. We were writing, you know, same vein, meat on the bone and all that. Jean wasn't doing much writing. She sort of took a back seat. And I'm sure psychologically that got to her a bit too, you know, because Nikki and I were hashing it out, you know, doing it. So that was in there too. There was a lot in there at the breakup and what happened. It was sad.